This is Steve Maxner conducting an oral history interview with Mr. Chan Tan Chu on August 18, 1999 at 8:45 a.m. at Texas Tech University. Mr. Chu, would you describe for us or briefly give us your name, date of birth, where you were born, and a brief description of growing up in Vietnam?
My name is Tan Tan Chu. I was born April 24, 1927, at Tam Kỳ, a city south of Tura of Da Nang, about 64 kilometers south of Da Nang. my parents. I am the oldest boy in the family of 13 people. My parents were Confucian, the Buddhist, and you know, were revolutionary, anti-French. My grandfather was a member of, you know, Cang Vuong in 1885 against the French, and my father was a member of the Phan Bảo Châu, you know, and Cường Đệ party against the French, and he participated in many movements in Guangdong, you know, in this time from 1905 to 1916. And in this time we were confused. We are not Catholic. But for me, when I was 10 years old, my father sent me to a Catholic school, and I became Christian. But after that, you know, in 1940, all my family, my father, my brothers, you know, were converted to Christianism. My father, in 1933, he knew the communists very well. I don't like the communism. They don't like the ideology of communism. And he was a member of the Ngô Đình Khôi in Ngô Đình Diệm, you know, political organization. Because Ngô Đình Khôi at that time, the brother of Ngô Đình Diệm, was the province chief, tổng đốc of my province. And my brother too is a member of Ngô Đình Khôi and Ngô Đình Diệm, you know, political organization. By this way, you know, my family and I were familiar with, you know, Ngô Đình Khôi, Ngô Đình Diệm, you know, when he was a child. And you know, I remember, you know, when he was a child, you know, in my home, you know, my father meet many, you know, people, you know, like his friend, you know, and talking about politics, and has some idea about that. And I'm very interesting about politics, you know, and I'm very interesting, you know, about, you know, the French, you know, the political stories. But I don't understand very well. But you know, but in school, I was very interested in history. I read, you know, very much. And I begin to understand what was, you know, the French, you know, the history of my country, like that, you know. And when I became, you know, maybe 14 or 15, you know, I become also a little politician. And by this way, but we are not like, we don't like the communism. Then in 1945, the Vietnam communists. We know that. I don't know very well they are communists. Mm-hmm. But you know the Vietnam don't like my father and my brother. Mm-hmm. And my brother, because of a member of Ngo Dinh Khoi, Ngo Dinh Diem, and he was executed. He was shooted, maybe assassinated, you know, in 1945 after the October Revolution. The August Revolution, 1945. Mm-hmm. In the same time, with Ngo Dinh Khoi and Phạm Quỳnh, you know, in this time. And from this, you know, that I became, you know, truly very, very anti-communist. I hate, you know, the Viet Minh, the communists, and my father said, you know, Ho Chi Minh, you know, it was not a good leader. Ho Chi Minh, you know, he lead the country to a catastrophe. It is, you know, my beginning, you know, of my childhood in 1945.
What did your family think of the Japanese occupation during World War II? And how, was there maybe temporary support for the Viet Minh since they were so staunchly anti-Japanese?
My family?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's a good question. You know, he's a revolutionary patriot. The Japanese, you know, for us, is a good lesson for restoration, for modernization. My father, my brother, and I are very interested about, you know, the Meiji area, the modernization of Japan. And we'd like, you know, to do the same way as Japanese did in 1866. And my father, my brother, my oldest brother, and I am the youngest, and are very enthusiastic about the Japanese. And you know, we sincerely, when he was young, but you know, I hope, you know, the Japanese help us to kick away the French. And we like to take Japan as an example for modernization. But this way, in one side, you know, we respect, you know, we the Japanese for modernization, but we had the communism, we had the Russia, you know, it is my idea in this time.
So there wasn't a lot of anti-Japanese sentiment in your family. You pretty much were, you thought the Japanese occupation during World War II was okay, or
yeah. I think my brother, mm-hmm. and my father. My father spent 3 years in France, mm-hmm. in France, mm-hmm. in 1916. Mm-hmm. He know the
during World War
I. World War I, mm-hmm. because you know he was he feared to be jailed, to be embraced by, you know, by the French, mm-hmm. after the Yutan insurrection. Mm-hmm. He become, you know, a soldier, a worker soldier, mm-hmm. to France, you know, to work over there for 3 years. But he know the communists over there, and he knew Ho Chi Minh over there. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And with the French, you know, with the Japanese, you know, he expect, you know, the Japanese, mm-hmm. help us to kick away the French. By this way, in the coup d'état 1945. The coup d'état, the 3 March, the net 9 March in 1945, my father and my brothers were very, very, very happy, and to do something, you know, for the country. And with Ngo Dinh Diem as a leader, you know, you understand,
yes.
Ngo Dinh Diem during this time it was very popular too, and we hope, you know, with Ngo Dinh Diem as leader, we can talk to with Americans, mm-hmm. because his brother, Ngo Dinh Diem brother, or was Ngo Dinh Thuc bishop, mm-hmm. and he Catholic bishop, mm-hmm. and he can talk to Americans, mm-hmm. and you know, and make Americans understand, you know, our feelings, our aspiration, and but the world. But after March 1945, we convinced Khao Ngodan Yee and become Prime Minister. But I am, you know, but he refused to be Prime Minister. And by this way, you know, we an opportunity to be free from communists was lost.
Now, after the Second World War, and the French were reintroduced and took over Vietnam again, what was life in Vietnam like from 1946 to 1954 during the French Indochina War? What do you remember of that period?
From
1946 to 1954, when the French came back into the country.
Oh yeah, yeah, all the time.
The French Indochina War.
Oh yeah, no.
What
oh,
was?
Yeah, your, well, you know, a big change. Mm-hmm. A big change. During this time, in 1945, after the coup d'etat, you know, when the French were out, a nationalist movement, you know, grow up, and all everybody think act for independence, like movement, and the Vietnamese explode this feeling. You would say, we are not communists. Ho Chi Minh, I am not communist. I am a nationalist. And everybody, you know, maybe, you know, like Vietnam, I am too. Sometimes, you know, because my father said, now, you know, the Roscoe's, it was captured by the Vietnam against the French. You must go with them. But in the future, we have changed with American, and now I am. Maybe you know you can you know choose the right way. But this way I became a cadet of a military academy of Vietnam, you know, army. And but you know I don't believe in the future with the Vietnam, because you know my family like that, my father, my brother, I'm Catholic, you know. And after, you know, 1 year, a quick, you know, the Vietnam movement, the Vietnam, you know, side, and I come back to my family, and on 1 year after, you know, I go to the city, to the faithful, to the Hội An, you know, during this time, you know, the city was captured by the French, but you know, I don't cooperate with the French. I was waiting, you know, for the future. And in 1950, when the American, you know, begin to help the Vietnamese side against the communist with the Bảo Đại solution. In 1951, you know, I choose the side of nationalists and became a cadet of you know Da Lạt Military Academy to become officers in 1951. When you know when after 1950, when the American with Truman, you know, and a season help Bảo Đại regime to fight against the communist, and I become an officer of the new army.
Okay.
Yeah. In 1952, I become officer.
Okay. Yeah. So what did you think of the French occupation in leading up to 1954, since it was anti-communist, did your family support the French in 1952, 1953 during the French Indochina War? What did you think of the French in the 1950s? In the 1950s.
50.
When you became a cadet, what
cadet?
Did you think of the French?
Oh yeah, I just used, you know, my idea with the American help, American, you know, always. Don't like the colonialism, and American, you know, forces must the French, you know, to give us independence. The independence is the motto.
Okay.
I use that I become officer, you know, not for French, but against communists, and to take to have a Vietnam independent with the help of the Americans. This way, you know, I'm I believe, you know, in the American. In the, you, maybe I tell you a story. In 1947, I began to learn English. I tell you English, and you know, I am very impressed about the Fulton speech of Churchill. You remember the Fulton speech of Churchill at Missouri University?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I believe in the future, you know, the Cold War between America and Russia, mm-hmm. and Britain, a communist, mm-hmm. and we believe in the future, you know, America must help us to fight against the communists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then in 1949, mm-hmm. the communists took over China. In 1950, mm-hmm. the communists, you know, attack, you know, Korea. Mm-hmm. That is where, you know, I have conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Conviction that we should be independent with the help of the Americans.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talking about the Iron Curtain speech given by Churchill?
Huh? Yeah.
The Iron Curtain speech
given by
Churchill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
In Fulton speech.
Yes, yeah.
At Fulton speech. You know. Weekly New York, because this time I cannot read very well the English, mm-hmm. but I am very interested.
Mm-hmm.
I felt at home to my father. Here, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So after mm-hmm. the French were defeated by the Viet Minh,
mm-hmm.
and the Geneva Accords were signed mm-hmm. in 1954,
uh-huh.
and the country was divided north mm-hmm. and south,
mm-hmm.
What was life like in Vietnam during that period, that tumultuous period of division, and then what did you think of the prospects of an election in 1956? And what did your family think of the election, potential election, where Ngo Dinh Diem would have been basically fighting against Ho Chi Minh for mm-hmm. national control
yeah.
and reunification?
In 1954, in April, mm-hmm. I was in Korea. You know, like officer, I went over there to observe to the Korean training centers over there,
mm-hmm.
how they train, you know, their army, with the American advisors. And then during this time, you know, Điện Biên Phủ were fall. And after Geneva, you know, I was very nervous,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and I don't believe in the future. I very nervous, very pessimistic,
mm-hmm.
and we must do something. And for me, the best way for me now, you know, is to have a good year to come back. I believe only in Ngo Dinh Diem, the man who can save the country against the communists. I don't like the, you know, I don't like the communists.
Mm-hmm.
I never worked for them. I fight against the communism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my father, my family, you know, all my brothers, you know, don't like that, because we are the victim of the communism.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very happy I'm very happy to become the adjutant of President Ngo Dinh Diem. When Ngo Dinh Diem come back from Paris,
mm-hmm.
from France,
mm-hmm.
to become Prime Minister,
mm-hmm.
I became his aide-de-camp, very close to him.
Mm-hmm.
I went with him everywhere.
So you knew him well.
Yeah, I live at the President Palace. Yeah, and but I never worked for the communists, you know,
mm-hmm.
never, you know, never, never. We, you know, if 1956. In 1955, Ngo Dinh Diem was have consolidated his regime.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we Ngo Dinh Diem was very popular during this time.
Mm-hmm.
For me, truly, I am communist. I am, you know, anti-communist.
Mm-hmm.
and you know the other people too. Maybe you know, like Nixon, Nixon one time said, if the election you know happen, the people you know, the people. Maybe they don't like, they don't vote for Ho Chi Minh in the south, mm-hmm. but at the north, under a communist regime, they are not free to vote. Like here to now, the people are not free to vote. It is the problem. Mm-hmm. Then to for vote for election, it must to be free for the two parts of the countries, mm-hmm. and to be under the a good supervision, some supervision of international organization. Mm-hmm. You know, because under communist regime, totalitarian regime, mm-hmm. they control in the mind, control you know in the body by organization. Not easy now too, now, mm-hmm. here in Vietnam now, mm-hmm. for what? Not easy for what against the communists, mm-hmm. not easy now. Mm-hmm. Because you know, wicked, a total regime. It is the reason, you know, it is the reason we don't have the election. Mm-hmm. But for me, I never vote for the communists, my family, and other people in the south too. Mm-hmm. I believe that they vote for the communist, but in the north it is different.
Now, with Ngo Dinh Diem in that period, that very difficult period between 1954 and 1957-58, and he consolidated his regime. What did you think about his treatment of some of the groups, the competing groups in Vietnam, like the Buddhists, the Khao Zai,
yeah,
the Binh Duy,
yeah.
the Hoa Hao?
Yeah, that's right, you know. In 1954, the situation of the nationalist side is very critical, you know, very dangerous, very critical. One side, the French, weak on force, 200,000 people. On the side, we have the three sects, Ahmed, Khao Dai, Hoa Hao, Bunsuyen, Catholic in the south, mm-hmm. three forces, they are armed with their own armies. Mm-hmm. The king, you know, mm-hmm. in the area. They don't obey, they don't accept, you know, the leadership of Saigon. Like a Bunsuyen sect. Mm-hmm. You know, he controlled Saigon. He controlled, you know, everything. Police, you know, casino, prostitution, mm-hmm. yeah. and then you know, were controlled by the Khao Dai, in the Delta by the Hoa Hao, and the center of Vietnam by the Dai Viet and Quốc Dân Đảng Party. They had their own forces, mm-hmm. and the French. They are the middle. They try to use all the sect to make confusion, to be you know to handle the country, and the army, the Vietnamese forces were under the French. Vic Dien Hinh, a French citizen, you know, like chief of staff, control you know the army. And you know the problem in 1 year, from 1954 to May 1955, we couldn't give you know solve all these problems. Binh Duyen, Khao Dai, Hoa Hao, French, everything, and he controlled the country in 1955. 1 year, not easy. Mm-hmm. In this time, do you remember Leon Collins? Mm-hmm. Who was ambassador over there, mm-hmm. in May 1955, he come back to Washington, mm-hmm. and he advised to President Eisenhower and Dunn to kick the Ngo Dinh Diem and to replace by other people. Mm-hmm. But you know, Mr. Dulles, mm-hmm. you know, don't agree, and you know the situation, you know, mm-hmm. have a big change. Mm-hmm. Then you know. The Buddhists, from 1954 to 1963, we don't have the Buddhist problems. Mm-hmm. We don't have. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we are anti-communist. And we are Catholic, you know. I'm Catholic before. But it is stupid to persecute the Buddhism. It's stupid. Fool. No, never. And me, you know, I am Catholic, but my family is, we are Confucian, but we respect the Buddhism. Mm-hmm. We've been, I am myself, you know, a division commander. You know, I've been, you know, I've been pagoda. You know, I encourage people go to the pagoda. The pagoda, you know, it's because very, very important for us. But, you know, maybe in the Buddhism, they are jealous about the Christian, about the Catholic, maybe like that. But, you know, President Yim, you know, have the same policy with Catholic or Buddhism. In the army, we say, you know, maybe Catholic general, but in reality, in the army, you know, we have many Buddhist general, Confucian general, like that. And we don't pay attention for question of religion. Modern Yim never pay attention for religion in the government. He also, I am the president of the own country. I am not the president of Catholic Church. But this way, you know, the Catholic bishop don't like him. You know, sincerely, I can say you like that. Many North Vietnamese refugee Catholic, you know, don't like him because you know he because don't pay attention for the question of religion. Never gonna happen like that.
Well, what? Why did the Buddhists start protesting then?
Why?
And why did some of the Buddhist monks engage in self-immolation?
Yeah, in 1963. In Vietnam, you know, we have, you know, the true religion of Vietnam is ancestor cult. We have Catholic, we have Buddhism, but Buddhism is the name. To the pagoda, you know. You know that in 1963, you know, the question is the flag. The flag, you know. But you know, I don't know why, you know, why we have a flag like that, you know, and we have become a big problem. But the problem is, I think for me, is by jealousy. We become between Buddhism and Catholicism. Maybe it is the reason.
Okay.
But in Modern Yim, you know, in Modern Kang over there in the center. His brother at the center, Wela. He Modern Kang was a very good friend of Thich Trích Quang. He used money from Thich Trích Quang to build pagoda over there. Modern Kang gave money to Thich Trích Quang. To rebuild, you know, pagoda over there.
What about some of the controversy about Nodin Zim's land reform program and the land redistribution, and in particular the distribution of land to the Catholic population that fled from North Vietnam, when Ho Chi Minh took over in 1954, and a lot of Catholic people from the north came south, and there's of course a lot of controversy because land was taken away from some people and given to Catholics, and the conflict emerged. What do you think about that issue?
You know, I remember I was with President Yim in 1954 to North Vietnam. And you know, with Nguyen Yim is the prime minister, many Catholic from north believe in Nguyen Yim and fly to the south against the to under no, I don't like the communist regime. And we have all millions of refugees, the Buddhists, you know. you know, they don't have organization, you know, and that they are not strongly anti-communist like the Catholic. They are not well organized, no leadership over there, and are not strongly anti-communist. And we have only, you know, Catholic refugees, 1 million over there. Maybe the most refugees are Catholic. And the biggest problem for us, for resettlement, and with the help of Americans, have a big help. We can, you know, resettle the refugees in 1 year. With 1 million people, not too easy. And we use, you know, the land, you know, like in the, everywhere, you know, by in the in the high plateau, in the plain des plain of reed, and you know, to reset and around Saigon, to resettle the refugees. Then you know, I don't know the site of the you know, of the refugees camp are chosen. Not, you know, it depends, you know, on economic, you know, economic point of view. Then we don't pay attention, you know, for, you know, to pay land, to go land to the Catholic or to the Buddhist at this time. But for one thing, that the Catholic, the not Catholic, you know, they are well organized under a priest, you know, they go to the went to the south with all the village, and they are well organized. That's where basically the land reform. In 1955-56, we are land reform, and in the south, I don't have any exactly any idea about this one, you know. I mean, to tell you, you know, the true story, but you know, I have, but I think, you know, we don't have enough money to pay back for the owner, the owner, because you know, we are not like communists. We buy the land from the landlord to have over 100 hectares, and we pay them, you know, for the land. But you know, we don't have enough money for pay for the land for the owner, and maybe, you know, but this way, you know, we have a not good land reform program in 1956-57. But I don't know exactly very well about this story because I'm not you know, pay attention about this one.
Okay. Yeah. One of the other policies under the Diem government was to cancel certain election processes, like village elections. What did you think about those policies? And do you think they contributed to some of the people in South Vietnam becoming upset with the
Diem? Yeah. No, because you see here, we have two periods. In the first period, you know, all the area, the countryside, in a year against the French, were controlled by the communists. They are very strong. In 1954, their forces, armed forces, you know, go back to north, but in the south they have a infrastructure, you know, maybe what about, you know, 50,000 party members, but they are not communists. I am a nationalist. We are nationalists, but they are well. They have good propaganda, good organization, and maybe good tactics of terror, of terrorism. But this way, if we use election in the village like that, maybe, you know, the communists can use, you know, the election to subvert the village people. But in 1961, we have the Hamlet program, you know, the Hamlet program, you know, we have the contract. The contract, you know, and we have the election at the hamlet, you know, Echelon. Do you know that at the hamlet, the key of the strategic hamlet in political side is election to choose, you know, a hamlet chief, a hamlet committee, at hamlet by election, freely election.
So the cancellation of elections in villages.
In 1956, it is. But after that, after the strategic hamlet program, the election, you know, of the leaders of the hamlet, you know, are very, very well organized, and very freely. Yeah.
Okay. Some Americans have. American historians and scholars have argued that the strategic hamlet program had some fundamental problems, and being, first of all, that this was a very foreign type of environment for the average Vietnamese villager, being put in concrete, the cinder block houses, and this was a very strange way for Vietnamese people to live compared to village life prior to the strategic hamlets, and that this created some problems. What do you
know? In Vietnam, you know, we have the village organization long times ago, and we are strong by this way with the village culture, village civilization. And the communist side, you know, had the 40 field village. You know how you pronounce 40 field? 40, you know? 40 field village.
45?
45 village. The village, it was organized and armored.
Okay.
In the communist side. Mm-hmm. And they resist the French very, very effectively. Mm-hmm. And we... More than you, with the help of Thompson, they tried to organize, you know, the Hamlet, you know, program. The Hamlet program is not, you know, a military side, politics. It is a revolution. It is the concept of Vietnamese government. Is a revolution at the bottom. Military, giving security, second one, and that politics, economy, education, culture, like that. It is all things. But this way, it is a revolution from the bottom. And now the communists now, they fear the American now. To making it like a coup d'etat, you know, before, and they try now to consolidate, you know, the hamlet. Now, in the countries, they said a cultural hamlet. And in this time, the communists fear very much about the hamlet, you know, program. You see Nguyễn Chí Thanh, you see many documents on communist side. They fear the strategic hamlet program. They fear. You see, you wrote in the documents, and I remember, you know, Nguyễn Cordon, you told me in 1962, he said, if I realize to organize, the most of the hamlet are organized, we don't fear the communists. We can win the war by this way, but very cheap, very like that. Understand? You know understand? The newsman and Sheehan and Hamburgstam.
Halberstam.
Halberstam. You know my pronunciation. Mm-hmm.
Understand.
Halberstam. You know, say, you know, the hamlet, you know, was a prison, a concentration camp. Mm-hmm. but it is not my our concern. I was commander of popular forces.
Okay, during this period,
yeah,
you were commander of
the commander of self defense corps.
Okay, this was in
1995. I was from the commander of self defense corps from 1961 to 1963.
Okay,
I know the effect of the strategic combat program. And Conby, Mr. Conby, told me, you know.
William Colby.
Conby, you know, I met him, you know, before he died. He said, you know, the Hamlet and the problem for the self-defense corps are very good, you know, formula for anti-communist. You know, maybe you know, I send you, you know, some documents about the strategic Hamlet, you know. Document on
like
Hamlet,
yes,
you
like
know, for your explication, you know, for clearing, you know, the idea,
okay,
the concept.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know the communist now in this time now.
Mm-hmm. Right now.
Now.
Today.
The common sphere, you know, the American subvert, you know, their government, and use maybe make coup d'etat like that, and they try to control, organize the Hamlet. They say the control Hamlet,
cultural,
but you know, it's exactly the last Nazi Hamlet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, as commander of the Self Defense Corps, and was this just in the Saigon region, or was this the country?
All the south, from the 17th south of the 17th parallel.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was your primary philosophy in setting up the Self-Defense Corps from 1961 to 1963? And was it was this a way of controlling the population, or was this a way of preventing northern infiltration, or was there what was the situation in Vietnam during that period? Was there a lot of northern infiltration?
No, you know, the duties of the Self Defense Corps is to protect the people at the village level.
From whom?
From communist, you know, communist subversion, not communist infiltration. Communist infiltration is the job of the special forces and of the rangers. For me, for us, for the self-defense guard, is to help the people at the hamlet and the village level, and we are ready for any, you know, act of terror of communists at the level of village and hamlet. But because, you know, from 1957 to 1960, your ambassador,
the bro,
and your civilian, you know, official, don't like, you know, to organize, you know, the popular forces, the self defense corps, and Michigan State, you know, you see, you know, they try to organize a police forces, not like here, but like in America, it's different. Because in America, you know, the police and the FBI, you have, you know, a different society. And Dobro Golden Year in 1957, he went to Washington, and he told to Eisenhower to learn about the strategy against the communists, you know, from outside, from north, and from the inside, you know. And I request the American to help him to organize the Self Defense Corps and the Civil Guard and the Racial Forces. But over there, you see, so it is the army, tried to organize the whole army for keeping him in power. And the pro, you know, I don't like the pro, you know. Before, I don't know that. But when I come here, I read to the minister papers. On the pro in Vietnam, and on the economic, you know, some organization they don't like to help the self defense squad. They try to disband them. Mm-hmm. And we are very when I took over the self defense squad, they were the very very bad. Bad weapons, no ammunition, you know, no training, no organization, no command, no logistics. But the communists from 1956 to 1961, you know, it rises up from village level. You know the very well, you know, the organization of the communists, the keyboard. The keyboard, the village, they control everything. The keyboard, the cell, the chapters, and the village, they control everything. And they can use every means to sabotage the hamlet. And the only, you know, the self-defense corps, the man in the village, who can protect the people and deal with the terrorism of the communists. But, you know, the American in this time don't pay attention for that. And the army, big division, you know, I like you know, before, big division, you know, big artillery, you know, trucks, you know, moving in the road like that. I am division commander for the 21st, but I don't like it, you know. I command a staff college, but I don't believe in this, you know, in this tactics, in this strategy. You know, to up and down, COPL, but the communists, they use the people war, the guerrilla war. They don't use the conventional war, like, you know, in Korea. In the future, you know, sometimes the American meet the same problems when they commit their forces here.
So, in 1950s, from 1957 to 1961, the communists, when you say communists in the village level, you're talking about South Vietnamese communists.
Mm-hmm.
And these are people who live in South Vietnam, mm-hmm. are from those areas, but they are communists.
They're communists, yeah.
How much is, in 1957, how much are they controlled by Ho Chi Minh? How much control by Ho Chi Minh and the North?
Yeah.
In your estimation?
You know, how much? You know, the communists are strong by propaganda, by organization, and by terror, by terrorism, are strong. They strong for by propaganda, by organization, and by terrorism. In 1957, we destroyed almost all their infrastructure at the village by using the anti-communist denunciation. And all the cadres were dedicated and destroyed. And now the communists change the policy. They don't use them. Before I used, you know, I believe in the political structure. But 1957, they changed the tactics. And they use the armed struggle. It's the terror, you know, terrorism, shooting, you know, like that, and like you see here, like, and everybody, you know, because we don't have forces to deal with them at the village level, and from day to day, from step to step, you know, the communists, you know, control the delta in the south, mm-hmm. but in the center they cannot do, because you know we know the communists mm-hmm. over there at the center, mm-hmm. and the communists cannot, you know, rise up like in the south, like in the delta of the South Vietnam.
In the Mekong Delta.
In the Mekong Delta. Yeah.
Now the communists in the south, mm-hmm. were they controlled by Ho Chi Minh?
Yeah, sure.
There was.
Sure.
In 57?
Sure. We Viet Cong, you know, they are communists. Are communists? Why we here? We, you know, we have a distinction between the Viet Cong and the North. No, they are the same. Lê Duẩn Lê Dũng, you know, over there. Lê Dũng came to the south with the path of revolution, with many tactics, ministry, like you know the cat, like you know the chameleon change the color. But they are but the chameleon always the chameleon.
Chameleon.
Mm-hmm. You see, and why here? I don't know why your scholar. We have a distinction with the Việt Cộng. The Việt Cộng or the no, they are the same. Now they are the. I don't understand why you know we have a distinction. The Việt Cộng are not under the communist. The Việt Cộng or the North Vietnam communist Vietnam, they are the same under the communist regime. Under control, with Thai control.
Okay.
If somebody you know in their party mm-hmm. don't agree with them, you know, they are ready to kill them. You know now, mm-hmm. you know now, mm-hmm. in Vietnam now, mm-hmm. many general you know are assassinated.
Today?
No, in this time, you know, since 8 years, since 10 years. You know, Wang Minthai, you know, Nguyễn Chí Thanh, you know, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hola. Like communists, but communists are communists, South and North or South, they are communists.
Okay. Yeah. How much support with military material was there between Northern communists and Southern communists, though? And say 1957 to 1963. I understand the philosophical link, but what about actual military and support for the Southern revolt,
yeah.
Southern communist revolution?
Yeah. Yeah,
was there a lot of stuff coming from north to south?
From where?
From north to south, from
south
North Vietnam,
and then and when?
To South Vietnam. So 1957 to 1963.
Okay. From 1966 to 1959. The policy from North Vietnam is, you know, to consolidate the North first.
So 1956
to 1959. Uh-huh. The Politburo over there,
mm-hmm.
their policy is to consolidate the North first.
Okay.
And the South, you know, the strategy is a political struggle. Mm-hmm. It is. But from the 1959, you know, with the 14th resolution in 1959, Lê Dũng mm-hmm. come back from North South Vietnam, mm-hmm. and Lê Dũng, you know, persuade the Politburo to permit the South to use the armed struggle, to use the terror, you know, with units and battalion size, you know, company size to attack like that. From 1959, and the Ho Chi Minh Trail, the Ho Chi Minh Highway, begin to organize, you know, in two ways, from in the sea and in the land.
Year was that?
1959. Okay. 59, and first they tried to capture the Laos, they control Laos first, and the Laos is very important. The Laos, if we like to control the South Vietnam, we must handle the Laos, and you know and we open the Laos, you know, and the communists North Vietnam, you know, have a wide access to go south, the big highway, you know, the main even the wide highway, you know, to go to south,
the Harriman Highway.
Yeah, Harriman Highway, you know, this way, you know. Well, in 1962, you know. We are very, very nervous about the Laos agreement.
Mm-hmm.
We fear, you know. Why? Why your policy is like that? You know, Laos, you know, the border of Laos,
mm-hmm.
and they are the middle of Thailand,
mm-hmm.
Vietnam, South Vietnam, and Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1962, you know, we have an argument of neutrality,
mm-hmm.
but they are neutral. You know, the communists never neutral, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Never. Just that. Never. The communists, they are never neutral. Yes.
When you say the policy towards Laos and neutrality, Huh? You said the policy towards Laos and the Laotian neutrality. Mm. You mean you're talking about the establishment of Laos as a neutral country that's not supposed to be violated by either side.
Mm,
is
yeah.
that correct?
It is, you know, in principle, yes. in theory. Mm-hmm. But the communists, you know, never accept this one. They use only the for propaganda, mm-hmm. for tactics only. And you see that the history confirmed this one. And Hariman in the Hariman and you know his man and Cooper, you know Cooper,
mm-hmm. Mr. Cooper.
Cooper, you know that. Now you don't see, you know, the communists never, you know, how to say, to
honor,
honor the agreements. Never. Hariman, you know, he was very intelligent, you know. You know Hariman? You know. But this way, if you control the Laos by cutting, you know, mm-hmm. the Laos in two, mm-hmm. from Mekong over there in here the China Sea. Mm-hmm. With you know two division, with the bulldozer, with the big highway, you know like that. Highway from Savannakhet to mm-hmm. to Dong Ha like that, you know. Mm-hmm. We easily the North Vietnam or the Chinese cannot go to the south. How? Okay. You see? No. By land, impossible.
Okay. Would you tell us about your division command experiences? Conventional force.
When I come back from America, Corporal Commander Staff College, my dream is to become, you know, Civil Guard Director. You know, Civil Guard Director? Mm-hmm. It is regional forces. Mm-hmm. Before I was Chief of Operation of Civil Guard Directorate. But when I come back from Commander Staff College,
this is the Command and Staff College in Fort Leavenworth, Kansas.
Kansas, 1957.
Okay.
President Yeager sent me, ordered me to become a Chief of Staff and Assistant for of Division Commander of 11th Division at the Delta, at SADC at Delta. I was very upset. I was very unhappy because I don't like this job. Because the job to fight against the communist subversion, it's not the division commander with conventional forces. They don't know anything about that. But I like the job in the Civil Guard or Central Defense Corps. But I must obey the order. 6 months after, I was promoted to be Light Colonel, and division commander of Light Division, 14th Light Division at Quy Nhơn. You know Quy Nhơn? Quy Nhơn, you know, east of Pleiku in 1958. But you know, I don't like this job too, because you know this time you know the communists they don't use the big units, conventional forces. They use the guerrilla, you know, terrorism in the village, you know, in the night time, you know, they make, you know, they attack, you know, the ship of the village, you know, like that. The role is, the best role for anti-communism over there is self-defense corps. And in 58, we have a maneuver, you know, the big unit maneuver in the Pleiku area. 14 Light Division, 13 Light, 12 Light Division, 16 Light Division. But no maneuver, like the communist attack in 1975. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I was commander of 14 Light Division from Quy Nhơn up to Con Pleiku. Mm-hmm. With Gerald Ford, American. Of general, he's advisor for training.
Mm-hmm. What's his name again?
General, I forget this one. Myers, General Myers. And he said, if you are a communist, you are Mao Zedong. Do you accept, you know, this strategy, weak unit like that? But for me, you know, I don't believe the communists, you know, in the future, use this strategy to take over the country. They use, you know, the Mao Zedong, you know, strategy. You know, like tư khoái nhắc mà. Tư khoái là three quick and one slow. Four quicks and one slow. It is a guerrilla concept, you know. For quick action, you know, quick attack, you know, and quick withdraw, but the planning is slow. I activated the 22nd Division. I was the first division commander of 22nd Division. But I don't agree with the corps commander. I was division commander, but I don't agree with the corps commander, Jean Tong Thach Dinh, who, you know, in the future, he made the coup d'etat in 1963. Tong Thach Dinh. I don't agree with him. But I, you know, as you see, I don't respect him.
What did you not agree with him on? The tactics?
The tactics, you know, on leadership, on command, and on behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah. Or dignity of an officer, you know. Mm-hmm. The dignity.
Dignity.
Dignity, yeah. And he tried to kick me away from 22nd Division. But President Diem, you know, now change me, you know, change. I go back to Delta, to Tây Ninh, to take over the 21st Division, to replace Colonel Nguyễn Bảo Trị. Now he become 3-star now, after that he become 3-star. Diem Trị now, time to come to talk or command of 22nd Division. But I'm not lucky. At February 1960, I was commander of 21st Division, and the communists, you know, beginning to attack, you know, to change the policy, and use armored struggle with big unit battalion, you know, and they hit my the base of one of my regiment. The 32nd Regiment at Tây Ninh, at Trang Sok. In the book you have at Trang Sok. But many stories read about that. I have some information about activities of the communists. And I tried to organize, you know, an operation preventive. But, you know, everything is ready for a counterattack. But my regiment commander, Nguyễn Minh Lập, he don't pay attention for the problem, for the situation. You see, operation like that, it is a peace time, no big operation. It's a kill, you know. He make, you know, the soldier tired, you know. Mm-hmm. The same way the tech. 28th February, 2 days before that. And he sent one battalion to go in operation outside of the base. And one battalion in alert, you know, in ready for operation, and one battalion in reserve. And his battalion commander, second division, second battalion, they were outside to play with the girl, you know. The regiment commander and the battalion commander, Nguyễn Minh is the regiment commander, and Hoàng A Sam is the battalion commander. They were outside and sleep with the girl. Maybe I believe communists. And you know, when the communists attack, you know, the base, you know, I cannot communicate with him. You go outside. I buy artillery already, made already, but cannot, you know, open fire. And my the 2 battalion, 3 battalion, one in operation, and one in reserve, and one in alert, you know, only used for the counter attack of the camp.
And
in this condition, in this time, you know, I go to the rescue for the regiment. But this time I have 3 regiments, you know. But not, you know, it's ridiculous. 1 regiment, you know, at the Kamau. Kamau, you know Kamau? In the south or in the south. And 1 in the plain region, Đồng Tháp 10, in the near Mỹ Tho. And 1 regiment at Tây Ninh. And I have nothing in my hands. I use only, you know, 30 trucks, you know, empty from the headquarters, division headquarters, to go to the rescue of the regiment. In the route, in the route to the regiment base, the communists organize, you know, an attack, you know, for the rescue forces. But I am so happy because, you know, from the base camp about 4-3 kilometers, I fear, you know, maybe the ambush of the communists. I stop, you know, my convoy of 32 trucks, and on platoon of recon, you know, recon with me, and we walk, you know, along the road in the darkness. And the communists believe, you know, my rescue is so big, and they withdraw. No ambush. And when I came to the camp, you know, I see the major commander of the regiment and the battle commander, you know, from outside, you know, go to see me. Oh, I am so nervous, you know. I hit them, you know, with my stick. Why you do that like that? Where is your commander? He was wounded over there. But now, you know, for the rescue, and we send you know, the message to the battalion outside, far away from the bear, about 15 kilometers, and we capture all 3 trucks, that full of weapons, heavy weapons. We recapture 3 trucks full of heavy weapons.
Where were those weapons from?
From my the camp.
From
the camp? Yeah.
Attendant?
The attendant, the communist took, you capture these weapons and the trucks to the jungle. But happily, you know, my battalion in operation, you know.
Your rescue force.
Yeah.
You recaptured.
Recapture.
Yeah.
And after that, we capture also, you know, about 20 mine, mm-hmm. in the road, in the ambush, but the communists, you know, fly away. But you know, in Saigon, on the newspaper, wrote that, you know, I was a son, and that I was not a Saigon. I was at Saigon. I'm not in Tây Ninh. I don't command, you know, the rescue, and I went to Saigon for dancing, for playing over there. All book, all newspaper from Saigon like that. And the pro, you know,
mm-hmm.
when they come here, and I read in the foreign relations, you know, history of state, you know, the state, you see, the pro send over that, send to the state a very bad, you know, report about me. The pro,
mm-hmm.
but Williams, John Williams, you know, he was really shocked, but you know he gave a report objectively. then I lose, you know, my command. I lose my future. My future, you know, because the division commander had to be colonel, had to be general, eh? Mm-hmm. Very easily. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know what? I lose my balance with the bad conduct of the regiment commander, mm-hmm. and accept the responsibility. You see, I think the story of Damsup. Maybe I wrote, you know, this story in my memory in the future. Here, many books of American books about this battle, the attack, but not it's not are not true. Mm. They don't know the real problems. But I don't like to write now. But now, after my trip here, after the talk with you, I try to write, you know, the true things about the township or the Thailand, you know, the township or too high, you know, attack in 1960. We lost about 20 people wounded, and about we have about 200 weapons got lost because, you know, they are in the store, small weapons, mm-hmm. but the heavy weapons, you know, we recapture, mm-hmm. but you know. Now in the American in the communist, you know, history, he say that he destroyed all the regiment and then he captured all the weapons, you know. So you see, and I was Saigon. I stayed Saigon, you know, after 75 or 15 years. You know, the officer who command, you know, the ambush, the communist ambush, you know. The ambush, my column, my rescue, he now commander of the 7th region at Saigon. Say, oh, if you are courageous, you know, you don't withdraw, you can destroy all my, you destroy me, the rescue column, and you destroy all 32 trucks very easily, and you can destroy all the regiment base very easily. But you, I was, when you know, mm-hmm. but you know, in Saigon, all newspaper, you know, told that I was not a Saigon. I was not at the I don't command, you know, the I don't command. Mm-hmm. I went to Saigon for dancing, for playing. But Ngô Đình he don't believe, and he very 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 nervous, very very, how you say, and nervous to me, very, how you say, colloquial French. He don't receive me. 3 months after, mm-hmm. I call to see him. But I don't accept my responsibility. I don't accept, you know, the responsibility of the regiment commander. But I criticize him, mm-hmm. because, you know, why you don't it is the wrong strategy. I say he is responsible for this strategy, but he's quiet, very quiet. He accept my critics. Mm-hmm. Why don't use the region forces? Why don't use the popular forces? And why you organize, you know, the division commander? Like you said to him, I am division commander, I have troops. But I have no command in the region. My soldier, they are most from reserve, from, you know, from reserve, from but bad soldier, but good weapons. And for the training for conventional war, you know, like, you know, in the daytime. Training like you know to play with the American, you know, movies, mm-hmm. but in the night time, you know, we play with the Chinese movie, the Chinese, it's different, mm-hmm. the guerrilla convention is different, the training, and at the top we are big, but at the bottom we are small. You know, at the top you have big headquarters, you know, big division, but at the village hamlet we have nothing. We have vacuum, and it is very easy for the companies to maneuver. I talked with him in about 1 hour.
But not in Zoom.
But in Zoom. I create the site because he's responsible for the strategy. But I don't know that. Now in America, when I read the books of Specter, and there were some books about, you know, the Vietnam crisis, and you know, he know this problem, but the pro impede him. Don't like to organize, you know, the set defense corps, the make to make road in the high plateau, make road, you know, strategic road, you know. He impede, like the 14 road, the 14 highway. The pro, you know, don't like to do that. The pro and Yim, you know, like that, you know. Until 1961, and the pro have a strong responsibility about, you know, the coup d'etat in 11 November 1960.
And
then now I respect more than him because I criticize him. You say in the beginning, you say he's very you know, why you are young, and you big job, you do your job, and you play. Miserable, you know, maler, pang, like that. And you see, and he smoked many cigarettes, you know, be nervous. And I tried to talk to him. May you give me, you know, a chance to talk to you? Okay, go ahead. Pang. But I just say, I criticize him. I was division commander. Mm-hmm. They say, you, if I hear other people talk about you, you are now in jail. You are now in jail. You must went to the Marxian court. Mm-hmm. But you know, I call other many people, you know, from Tainan to see me, the father over there, the priest, the monk over there, to ask about you, and I like now to hear your explication. I try to explain.
And after that, you say, okay, no problem.
I hear you. I have a pneumonia. Okay, go to the hospital. Take care of your pneumonia, and when you feel well, you know, I give you a job, and he give me an inspector general,
mm-hmm.
you know, for training,
mm-hmm.
in the army. After that,
how long did you do that? How long were you inspector general of Arvin?
Arvin, you know, for the four or 5 months.
Okay.
5 months, you know, and I say. But you know, I was, you know, I get a position, you know, how I say, the position.
Promotion?
No, position.
Permission.
Position. For 40 days, mm-hmm. of, you know, of arrest, you know, of jail.
Of rest?
Of arrest. 40 days in the army, it is a position.
Punishment?
Yeah, punishment, yeah.
You were put in jail?
Yeah, in jail, not in the papers. 40 days in jail, and no promotion for 5 years, and no command of big division, a big unit for all life. No command of big unit for all life.
That was your punishment.
Yeah. From the general staff,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Susie, my future is stopping,
mm-hmm.
from this time.
Mm-hmm.
No command. A big unit for all life.
Okay.
No command, a big unit.
So you so after you recovered from your pneumonia,
and
you became
you know,
inspector general
training for the army.
And then after that?
After November 60, after the coup d'etat 60,
mm-hmm.
a present year, you know, gave me a job as assistant for the commander of the Jenny Tan's gone.
Okay.
And 6 months after, he promote me as commander of Self Defense Corps.
Okay.
And I was very happy with his job. And he, the GM, was happy with me too.
And you served as the commander of the Self Defense Corps from 1961?
From 1961 to July 63.
Okay.
2363. Okay. We call it why? Yeah? It's 23 July 63. I organized a demonstration of the veteran, the
veterans
of the Self Defense Corps, and the wife of the families of Defense Corps, to Salai Pagoda, to Buddhist Pagoda, a Saigon, and to the house of your ambassador Nonti.
Nonting,
you know, and
Ambassador Nonting.
A demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my objective is, you know, the communists were in the quagmire in Vietnam. Don't try to help them. And try to help us to win the war. You know, and I bring the picture of all of many self defense corps killed by the war to the Pagoda Salai. And got a new, you know, don't know this story, because this story, you know, this demonstration, it was I organized this demonstration, but under the command of Jian Ding, who was my corps commander before, and now he was corps commander of Third Corps at Saigon, and he ordered me to organize a demonstration.
General
Din. And after I went on the new, I asked him, he denied. But when Đỗ Mậu, you know, make a request, a research, Đỗ Mậu, chief of security, military security, make a điều tra, make, you know, a search, you know, a study about this cause, and he tell to Sơn Nhú that I am not, you know, the man responsible, then irresponsible, and Sơn Nhú say, oh, you are good, but you know, I don't know the problem, then I give you a medal.
Mm-hmm.
In French we say medaille.
Mm-hmm.
How pronounce? Medal.
Medal? Like an award?
Yeah.
An award? A medal?
A medal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the 10th October 1963. It is my story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I quit the army, you know, the quit, you know, my job here is Self Defense Commander since 23 July.
Mm-hmm.
In the books, in the history books of state, in the history book of state,
the State Department,
we have a report from Nonting about this story.
Oh.
You have this here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The history books of state. In 1963, July 63.
Okay.
Foreign.
The Foreign Relations of the United States series?
From 1954 to 1963.
Mm-hmm.
In 1963 we had two tomes, two books, big like that.
Okay.
Yeah. The story, it's also we have, it was writing in the this history books.
Which one, which story?
In 1960.
And what story again? How do you
again,
spell
it? Again, the Trang Chup, you know, Trang Chup attack.
How do you spell that again?
Trang Chup, you hear? Trang Chup, Tây Ninh.
Tây Ninh.
Tây Ninh. Uh
huh. Trang Chup.
Trang Chup, you know. Tây Ninh.
Mm-hmm. Which is north of Saigon.
North Saigon, about Trang Chup, you see, Trang Chup attack, Trang Chup battle. This, you know, the communist, the Ma Chi Thọ, you know, who were commander of this attack.
Okay.
At the, you know, at the first, you know, first.
Okay. Now you mentioned Nodin Nu. And from the American standpoint, Nodin Nu and Madame Nu have been very controversial figures. Especially since Nodin Nu was in charge of the secret police or the police forces in South Vietnam under his brother Diem, and Madame Nu, for some of her public comments, she was very. I guess the nickname given her is the Dragon Lady.
Yeah.
What did you think of Nodin Nu and Madame Nu, and while you were serving in the Self-Defense Corps from 1961 to 1963, and how important were they in fueling some of the discontent in Saigon and outside of Saigon?
Yeah.
For me, you know, I like Douglas Pai, you know, said yesterday, my own perception.
No, Nguyen Nhu for me. Nguyen Nhu is the best man in the regime. The best. Without Nguyen Nhu, Nguyen Diem cannot stay to in power for 9 years. Nguyen Nhu is the best. The doctrine, the doctrinary, the you know. Nguyen Diem is leader, but Nguyen Nhu is doctrinaire, doctrine, theorician, theorician of the regime.
The theoretician
Of the regime, you know. For me, he very honest to me. He never lied to me. Never lied. He when I meet him, you know, he very sincere to me. Very sincere. If he don't like me, he say I don't like you. But you know, I try to explain to him, and it's okay. In 1962, I don't know the policy of government in Vietnam and in Laos. I don't know. And I don't know, you know, by this way, I don't know, you know, the reaction of Nguyen Nhu about the government policy in Laos and Manfield, you know, Senator Manfield. In Vietnam, you know, in end of December, and Nguyen Nhu, you know, told me that you know he lied, you know, to be self sufficient, you know, and use the Tragic Hamlet as the basis for his strategy and his new military strategy is to organize weak strategic hamlet at the base, and 700,000 of militia in the hamlet to secure the countryside. And he lied, you know, to request the American, you know, withdraw. And in the 4th April of 1963, he requested the American to withdraw from Vietnam step by step. But I don't agree with this. I was anti him. I am counter about this policy. Why you request the Vietnam the American withdraw? I don't agree with this policy. But now I understand. You see, in May in April, he request and Nguyen Nhu request, you know, the withdraw of advisor forces. Step for steps, you know that. You know that. Now in this one, in 1963,
okay.
angry. And in the time, you know, I angry to him. I don't agree with him. But now, you know, I know why.
Because, you know, Hariman, for me, Hariman, Borestor, Hinsman, when they get, you know, the Laos agreement about the neutrality, and he like, you know, to back Vietnam neutral, is Laos. But if Vietnam is neutral, you know, is Laos, you know, the communist, it is the way, you know, to give South Vietnam to the communist. But this way, you know, very dangerous for us. And on one side, you know, he organized the Hamlet strategic Hamlet, organized the militia, the Republican youth, and on side, you know, the Chiêu Hồi open arms, the Chiêu Hồi program, and third one, we us American advisor withdraw, and make some secret deal with Hòa Văn Đồng over there, via Manelli. Do you know that? Via Manelli, the police, you know. And you know, in May 1963, Hanoi, Hòa Văn Đồng, you know, agree with this policy because they fear the American intervention in May. But the Chinese over there, they don't agree. And with the coup d'etat, you know.
In November.
November, everything is gone.
So Nguyen knew, was he wanted American advisors out of Vietnam in April 1963.
April 1963.
And he wanted to strike some, he wanted Nguyen Diem to coordinate some kind of a peace with
The North.
With the North.
The North, you know. Because he feared the Hariman, you know. Hariman and Forrestal and his man, you know, policy. He said, you know, this policy is adventurous, adventure. To talk, you know, like that, and he because Hariman, you know, you know where Hariman, you know where? Because you know, I have the Lydon papers, you know, the Lydon papers, writing in 1961. That they lie, you know, to make into China neutral. Neutral, you know.
Okay.
But you know, it is not a good way for me. For more than you, it is a way to hand over the South Vietnam to communist.
Now, what about Madame Nu?
Oh, Madame Nu. He was like you, like Clinton, you know. He looked like Clinton, First Lady Clinton. Intelligent, beautiful, but arrogant. I don't like her.
You didn't like Madame Nu?
Sure. I like to talk to her more than you, but never talk to her. He's beautiful, intelligent, but arrogant. And he made many speech, many, you know, anti-American. But he's not suitable at this time. And but this way, you know, the Ngô family don't like her. Don't like her, you see. Don't like her. Me too. I don't like her.
What about her comments about Buddhists?
Huh?
The comments that she made about the Buddhists.
Me?
No, Madame Nu.
Oh yeah. He is intelligent, but you know, he don't speak English well as I. He speak well French, you know, but he like him to show up, and he use the barbecue like that. But you know, it is the best way to explain. But when the media are against her, very difficult for him, for her to explain in English, you know. When I read the newspaper, you know, a rickshaw, you know, with Madame New in the rickshaw, with a fan, and a Kennedy, you know, a kid. Like that, you know. But this way, you know, Kennedy in a very bad position. Kennedy, he don't like, you know, to make the coup d'etat. So, you know that? But, you know.
Very reluctant.
Yeah. But this way, you know. The Vietnam problem, you know, the story, many story, and Madame Ngo Dinh Diu, he's intelligent, but arrogant.
Okay.
English is not well, and her English is not well.
Okay, she doesn't speak English well,
yeah.
So she had a hard time explaining what she meant.
Not easy, yeah. With the media.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that the American advisory presence during, the, I guess, the late 50s, early 60s. Did you interact a lot with American advisors? Did you work with American advisors?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of them?
Oh.
Were they helpful?
Oh, yeah. That I tell you a story. My advisor. In division, at division 11, you know, I had many advisors. Connor, you know, Major, like Connor. And now, I told you first, you know, at division. Advisor division. When they were division commander at Con Tum, I think, you know, my first job is how to take care of the families, their family first, to give them house, you know, good school, good house for the families first. If they don't have good house, you know, we don't pay attention for their family, how they can fight against the communists. In this way, my first job is to give them a house for the families. Because I had long range from a division over there at Konto. I go to live there, fight there, and die there, no withdraw. You know, my long range planning at Konto, at Pleiku. And for this way, we must build up, you know, for the family, a village. They can use the land, you know, sufficient with the land like that.
Would you spell that for me, Kon Tum?
Kon Tum. Kon Tum Pleiku, it's the high plateau.
How do you spell it?
Kon Tum. Kon Tum. You have the map? You have the map? I show you. The map, you know, map. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got Kon Tum.
Kon Tum, you know, and my advisor, you know, who is Connor. You know, he don't like, you know, I must take care. For the training first. The training is the first job of division commander. But I say no, not yet. I must take care for my family, the family of the soldier first. I must build up, you know, for them, you know, some house, you know, out for them. And I spoke to them and they agreed to help me. You know, and my. We are very in good, you know, atmosphere with them, you know, with the staff like that. No problem with the American advisor. No problem. A division commander. And now, I send the defense corps. The first one, you know, a light corner. Quite big. A light corner. He was advisor for me. But, you know, because he's the officer, you know, he's very proud of him. Very proud, you know. And in the beginning, you know, he liked to impose me, you know, about the organization of the defense corps, the organization, the platoon, the like that, how many weapons like that, you know. And he said, you know, in America, the American people pay the dollar, pay taxes, you know, for you, for aid to Vietnam. But this way, you know, you must hear my idea. You know, okay, sure. I respect you and I pay, you know, I appreciate the dollars, you know, you have us more weapons, but you must hear me, because I'm Vietnamese, I know the problems, how to organize the self defense corps, you know, suitable to the situation of the village, and I come step by step, you know, time for and step by step, you know, they agree with me. And 1 year with me, we work together very closely. We become good friends.
What's his name again?
Colin Big.
Big?
Big, you know, big like big one, bigness, big, B-E-G.
Big?
Big.
Okay.
Big, grand big. And you know, in conclusion, I was in very in good you know atmosphere, in good you know, condition, in good you know, friendship. I'm an advisor because I'm frank. I talk to him, and if you don't lie, I talk to him. I don't lie. And he don't lie, he told me he don't lie, you know, he advised me, and after that, you know, we have, you know, a good, you know, friendship. Yeah, no problem with the advisor. But the problem, you know, the advisor must know the problems. The 1 year for them, not enough. Because 1 year, sometimes, you know, maybe 2 year or 3 year advisor. That is where, you know, in the beginning, always we have problems. But, you know, after that, you know, we to understand each other and become good friends.
What about when you were the division commander in Tianjin? What was your relationship with your American advisor there?
Oh, the same way. Mm-hmm. The same way. The same way. They are very nice to me. Mm-hmm. And they help me a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, without American advisor, how I can become division commander? Mm-hmm. Not too easy. Mm-hmm. You know that? Present year, like me, okay, but they must, you know, hear the idea from Henry Williams and from his advisors. Mm-hmm. You know, if the advisor report badly about me to Williams, and Williams, you know, tell, you know, have a bad impression about me, how your present year can make me a division commander? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see that? The role of the advisor in the division is very important. Very important.
Okay.
Their voice is very, very, very strong. They very, very strongly here. Very, very influential.
Did you, while you were serving in Tainan and in the Saigon area, did you hear of John Paul Van?
Not yet. When you were when I was at Self Defense Corps.
You heard of him when you worked in the Self Defense Corps?
When he was commander of the Defense Corps.
Did you ever meet him? Or?
No, yeah. I meet him and I meet, you know, General Colonel Clay, you know, Clay, mm-hmm. who precede him over there. Mm-hmm. Colonel Clay, you know, boy, the son of General Clay. Mm-hmm. He was advisor at the 9th, at the 7th Division. Mm-hmm. And Van also advisor 7th Division. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I meet him, Van also after. After, you know, the coup d'etat. But you know, Van, you know, he's arrogant. He likes to lead. He likes, you know, to be respected. Mm-hmm. And he don't know where the problems. In Vietnam, when he was after that, you know, when he became advisor at Black Goo, you know, here,
mm-hmm. yeah,
he was killed in the helicopters. Do you read the Sunny Light?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bright Shining Light.
Yeah.
By Neil Sheehan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I meet him, but I don't agree with him. He's too arrogant. He told me the stories about, you know, about the war, you know, about the Abak
mm-hmm.
Valley.
Mm-hmm. The Abak Valley.
You know that? Mm-hmm. Not very important, but he traumatized the story. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the media. The media, you know. Because the media don't like present year. And the media don't like, you know, the Vietnam War. Don't like the Vietnam War. But that's where, you know, we are victim of the media. Like the Tet, you know. Mm-hmm. The Tet offensive.
Tet Ma Tan, 1968.
We were the victim of the media. Van, you know, like Van, they tell bad story to the media. to understand, to see hand like that, and understand, you know, that they have the New York Times. The New York Times is a big New York Times is a big newspaper. The New York Times is the one in the labor establishment. You know that?
Liberal establishment.
You know that?
Mm-hmm.
You have some idea about that?
We are the victim of liberal establishment.
Do you think so? No.
I don't know. What do you think?
Oh yeah.
Do you think Vietnam was a victim of the liberal media?
Yeah. Liberal establishment.
Mm-hmm.
For me, you know my idea.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn quickly to your opinions and your views on what happened in November 1963 with the Diem coup, and when that coup occurred in November 1963, what did you think of it? What do you think were the important aspects of it and the important consequences of the Diem coup?
The consequences of the November 1963 Diem coup.
Because you know, the problem in Vietnam is leadership. We need better, we have weapons from your side, we have money from your side, but the leadership, you know, but not, it's very, it's not from America, from Washington, but from Saigon. And from Saigon we don't have leadership, you know, the civilian, the party leader, you know, the party leader like Nguyen Dang Đại Việt, or the Buddhist, you know, they are not good leader. To be a leader, not easy. Politics, you know, education, you know, control, you know, diplomatic, you know, military. Not only military, not only politics. The leadership, and you know, like you know, the officer like Thieu or Viên or Minh, you know, how they can become a good leader, and. Other party politics, other politician, that I don't have, you know, the vision of a good leader. We are short of leadership after the death of President Clinton. This is the backward countries. And now you see Hanoi now. We are now. Sort of leadership now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they give us many problems over there. The question of leadership. But here, because we have a good system now. Good system, you don't need leader, good president. Bad president don't care about. But your system can work, you know. But in Vietnam is different. It's different. It's a backward country. But here, you know, Clinton, good or bad president, you don't care. The same always work, you know. We have many advisor, good advisor, you know that, you know.
Okay.
Huh?
What happened after the coup? What did you do?
Did you mean me?
You. What happened to you after November 1963?
After, in the 2nd November, I was arrested. And put in jail.
What for?
Because you know, I am in the inside. I don't follow the. If I go to the Grand Staff headquarters, I say okay, I agree with you to make the coup d'état, but I can't do that. I can say that. And in the morning after the 2nd November, they arrest me. My friend, you know, of my same promotion, Captain Thiện. And after that he become colonel. He take a half track, you know, up more car to arrest me and put me and go and lead me to the Hegel staff, Jan Vien, and that to put me in jail, in the central jail. At Saigon for 3 days. But when President Diem was assassinated, Yan Khiem over that, that win for me to be free.
but you know, under control of the junta.
So you were arrested, imprisoned for 3 days, then released.
Released, you know, but on the arrest, house arrest.
House arrest. So you were watched.
But yeah. But you know, I see, you know, I tell to them, I tell to Vian, I tell to him, you know, you commit the biggest mistake by killing President Kim. Who will replace him in the future to fight against the communists? The communists is not the other communists, but the Vietnamese communists are very, they are very clever. They have experience of you know, 15 years from 45 to 55 to 65. And you know, Đông Mậu, you know, Đông Mậu, Viên Thiệu, you know, Thiệu, Kim, you know, they live with me.
What did you do for employment when you, after, in 1964, December 1963 into 1964, you had retired or resigned from the military?
Yeah.
And so what did you do after that?
You know, I became a laundryman.
A laundryman. But you worked, you said you worked for American.
For 25th Division, Kuti. The smallest business, you know. To get some money for my kids.
So you opened your own business.
Business, but small business. Mm-hmm.
And you did that until
1970. Mm-hmm. And I go back to Saigon, you know, to build a house now. I make a store for daily, you know, for, you know, like that, small store. But and I have many books. But I like the books. But now, you know, in my house in Saigon, you know, I have many, many books, you know. Like that, you know. Now Saigon, and now Seattle too. I like it. When, you know, I don't care the business, you know, but I like the books about the Vietnam War. Yeah.
Okay. When you, so you had a lot of interaction with American soldiers then, after 1965,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. When some Americans started to come into the country, mm-hmm. the conventional forces. Mm-hmm. What did you think of American forces, the American soldiers and the American...
Their behavior are very well. Mm-hmm. The soldiers. Very well, but I don't agree with them about the operation,
the tactics,
the tactics, you know,
the conventional warfare.
I say, you know, they use a big hammer to kill a fly, mm-hmm. but before to kill a fly, they destroy everything in the house. By using the tactics of conventional war, mm-hmm. or convention.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think that contributed to the problems after 19? Say leading up to Tet and after Tet, the fact that you had American soldiers engaging in these conventional tactics, destroying a lot of property and hurting a lot of people, did that help the communists?
Sure. But, you know, the communists like to have that. Mm-hmm. Like to have that. You know, I have some experience at Kuki, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because, you know, that they use big power, you know, big hammer. Mm-hmm. Only three or four guerrillas to hand them, you know, somehow. But you use the force, helicopter, artillery, you know, bombing like that. You know, not good tactics, mm-hmm. not sound. I in the Cleveland dealer, I tell them, you know, to use the rifleman, to use, you know, small units, you know, to use, you know, squad, company, and use, you know, commandos, rangers. It is more efficient. Mm-hmm. But after that, you know, the communists, you know, collapse.
Mm-hmm. After Tet 1968.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you continue this way, Johnson will continue to be president. You know? Mm-hmm. And swear, you know, maybe we can shorten the war. Mm-hmm.
But Johnson decided to resign.
Yeah, he resigned.
Or to not run for election.
Yeah. Yeah. If he keep one way in power, mm-hmm. and then He continued like that, you know. The communists will accept your condition in conference. Yeah.
Did you have interactions with other countries' forces, or just Americans?
I don't have any experience about that. I don't have any experience.
Like Australians, like New
Australian
Zealand,
or Korean. I don't have experience. But I hear that the Korean, you know, not too good, you know. They are too brutal. Yeah, brutal. But I don't have experience.
In the years from 1965 to 1968 and the American buildup, what did you think of that? What did you think about how the United States became so involved militarily in Vietnam? Did you think that was good or?
No. I said, see, why do you use the big hammer to keep them flying? Why you don't use your big hammer, you know, to cut, you know, the layouts into, you know, the Ho Chi Minh Trail? You know, by making a highway with one division, you know, to make a highway, you know, from Dong Ha to Savannakhet, they cut, you know, the Ho Chi Minh Trail. It is easier than to use your units, you know, dispersing all the country like that. But it's not economic, not efficient.
What did you think about the American bombing of North Vietnam?
Oh, yeah. Too many restrictions. You know, like, you know, in Kosovo now, the bombing, like in Iraq, you know, many restrictions over there. Why you don't bomb, you know, the Hanoi or Haiphong, the harbor, like Nixon did in 1990, you know, the communists fear that. Too many restrictions, then no efficient.
Do you think I think a lot of the concern in bombing, both in Vietnam and in more recent experiences like Kosovo, is killing civilians and the potential of killing men, women and children and older people. And so you have to be careful where you bomb and how you bomb.
Yeah, but you know, the question, you know, like Haifa. The Russian and the Chinese, you know, use the Haiphong harbor to support to support Hanoi, Haiphong. Why you don't bomb Haiphong?
Well, that raises a good question as far as if there's Russians and Chinese boats and sailors and other people in Haiphong and we bomb them. And would that potentially widen the war to include those countries and start killing Chinese and Russians?
Yeah, sometimes it was like, you know, like 1962. You remember Kennedy about the Cuba problems,
the Cuban missile crisis.
Yeah, sometimes we must, you know, audacious. You know, you fear too much. You fear.
Americans fear too much.
About China, you know. Mm-hmm. You know. Maybe I say, you know, fighting, you know, with the hand tied, one hand to shoot, the other hand, you know, like that, you know. It is the way to fighting. It is not the way. It is a limited war, but nothing succeeds than victory. You know, I don't understand you. McNamara, you know, and McNawa. I don't understand, you know. Maybe, you know, McNamara is, you know, not a good military man, not a good leader. He don't know anything about the military subject.
Well, you know what he did before he became he became Secretary of Defense.
You know,
he was CEO for Ford Motor Company.
Oh yeah, he know everything. He believe he know everything.
He was a businessman.
Yeah. But I don't. But because, you know, in Vietnam we have a man like MacArthur. In Vietnam, in Korea, you have MacArthur. MacArthur.
Uh-huh.
But in Vietnam, we have, you know, no, we don't have a MacArthur. Panmer or Westmoreland, you know, or Johnson, you know, Johnson, they have to, they fear, you know.
What about General Abrams?
Oh yeah, the best.
Okay.
After, you know, after this, the best. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The good commander. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But see, I think, you know, Abrams, the good general in Vietnam War.
One of the big shifts that occurred, you mentioned the problems with the conventional mindset, the conventional military war. One of the changes that occurred in 1966 and 1967 was the creation of CORDS, Civil Operations, Rural Development Support, yeah. Revolutionary Development Support, and Robert Comer and William Colby were put in charge of basically the pacification program. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that?
Oh yeah, very important. You know, I had time to visit, you know, a training camp at Vũng Tàu, you know, and me and my family, I have experience about that, you know. My cousin, my nephew, you know, my nephew, and the experience of my family. And this story is written by Conby in his books, The Lost Victory. Mm-hmm. I, with the help of God, you know, and with the help of the help of Conby, mm-hmm. and my nephew form on platoon. We tell weapons I gave her in 1962. And he became, you know, in this time, you know, two battalions of regular forces, of popular forces at Quảng Tín. And his men pacified a wide area of Quảng Tín province. When the Marine, you know, at Quảng Nam, you know, use their firepower, you know, to make, you know, to make the vacuum, mm-hmm. but you know, yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, well, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah,
and you know, then the coma, mm-hmm. he did a good job, but depend on region, on province, if the of the province know to use this one, you know, they become very efficient, mm-hmm. very efficient, mm-hmm. and the same one, the Phoenix program
or Cool One,
yeah, very important, because you know, if we destroy on communist infrastructure, I realize, mm-hmm. the regular forces, you know, become blind, you know, no food, no guide, no intelligence, mm-hmm. and we can easily to defeat, you know, the conventional forces of communists.
Now, did you know anybody who worked in Phoenix in the Phong Hoang program?
No.
Did you know anybody while you were in Vietnam?
Oh. The father of my nephew, you know, mm-hmm. who guided me here, mm-hmm. his father, he was in Phoenix. Program. He killed many communists.
Do you know what their operations were like? Did they? There's a lot of controversy in the United States about the Phoenix program,
yeah.
because people said that it was just assassination. And of course, William Colby very effectively argues that no. In fact, what Phoenix did was it would try to capture and convert members of the Viet Cong infrastructure. And in those attempts, at times, there would be combat, and men would be killed. And that it wasn't, these people, 22,000 or so Viet Cong cadre that were killed, they were killed within a combat environment. Is that in keeping with your understanding, or what did you know of the killings of Viet Cong infrastructure?
Yeah. That's, you know, because you know, I was killing the infrastructure of the communists, you know, we need to destroy them. By capture them, send them in jail or like that. Sometimes, you know. Sometimes, no. We must kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know. Of sincerely, sincerely, you know. American, you know, you are too human. Too human.
Mm.
You are too human, you know.
Americans are too human.
Yeah, we're human. You know, you like, you know, to converse them, you know, to become a good man, good food, you know, good money, you know. And, but sometimes, you know, sometimes we must use some terror.
Mm-hmm.
Terror. You know? Mm-hmm. But you in America, you know, I know that. You don't like this way. But for us,
from a Vietnamese
perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. Because the communists did the same way mm-hmm. to us mm-hmm. before 1945, 1954, you know. Yeah. It's more atrocious, more barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know me, how many innocent people killed by communists? But you never pay attention about that. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's good that you mentioned that, because of course a lot of the American focus on atrocities in Vietnam tends to be on events like the massacre at Son My or My Lai.
My Lai.
And what did in 1968 when you heard about this, what did you hear in Vietnam about it? What did you think of it? And of course, how did that compare to say the massacre of Vietnamese in Hue by the Viet Cong and by Pham?
Yeah.
Were these things well known by the Vietnamese people? These events, like My Lai and Hue, were they well known?
You know, I visit My Lai, you know, 4 months ago.
Ah.
But you know, My Lai story is. Make, you know, traumatic, you know, mm-hmm. tragic, mm-hmm. you know, by Americans. The Americans. By Hearst, John Hearst, you know. But, you know, Way story is more tragic. More tragic.
How so?
Huh?
How is it more tragic?
In My Lai, you know, we, you know, like that. Because, you know, in the atmosphere of war, mm-hmm. battle, you know, battle. But the way, you know, in the they kill the people in the cold manner,
mm-hmm.
you know, they dig a hole, you know, put all them, you know, over there, and you know, kill them, you know, many this way. But nobody talk about the way story. But always My Lai, always me. When you go over there, you know, I'm very, 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 very angry. I don't like this way, you know, by your media. War is war. In war is war, you know. How you control your men in when they was ambushed. They were receive the shoot from the guerrilla. In the advent war, we had the same way. In the French, when mm-hmm. in 1945, the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And you could become, you know, deal with us, you know, with the Vietnamese. More barbarian. Many, you know, my father, my brother were killed. We were living, dig up a hole and put him living. No dead. My brother.
Your brother was buried alive?
Yeah, buried alive. At July. My oldest brother. With 6 people. And at the end, you know.
This was done by the Viet Minh?
No, Vietnam, not communist the same way.
But yeah, but this is done by the communists.
Communist. At Tây Ninh, you know. Many Cao Dai adept, you know, were buried alive, you know. At Tây Ninh, not at Tây Ninh, you know, thousand. Many people buried alive at Quang Ngai in 1945 by communists. No story. No, nothing. You know, if you don't believe me, you know, But you ask some people about that. The, you know, the story of communists of Thailand, you know, thousand, you know, they put all them in the well, maybe 100, 200 in the well, put them in the well and got them alive.
Oh, Vietnam War, you know, Vietnam. They would to me lie, you know, this, all that.
But now the communists over there. Now the communists over there use the My Lai story to make propaganda.
Now, you said that you worked, if I understand, Kuchi.
Yeah.
So were you? So you must have been. Were you aware of all the communist activity, the tunnels of Kuchi?
No.
That wasn't well known at the time?
No. I don't know. I hear, you know. Mm-hmm. I hear, but I never, you know, go over there to hire somebody. But now, when they come back to Vietnam,
yes.
Then I go back to see, but, you know, it for a show up. Now, for a show up, you know, not true. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, they make now, you know, they arrange, you know, the tunnel like that, you know, make a demonstration. But before, you know, they have the top system. Yeah, I was there, you know. I hear about that.
But it was kept very secret.
Huh?
It was kept secret.
Yeah.
It was very good, very well kept secret.
Yeah.
What did you think of Thet Ma Thanh? And what was important, what was significant about Thet Ma Thanh 1968? And after the Tet Offensive?
Oh, yeah. For the psychology side, it was shocked for me and for you.
So you were shocked when you heard of all the attacks throughout South Vietnam?
Shocked for me too. When I was there, I was the victim. You know, all my family may be killed, may be burned, you know, in this time. You know. But you know,
members of your family were killed during this.
May.
Oh, there was fear that might happen.
Maybe. But we, it is America for us, you know, to escape from this bad situation. Could be at Saigon too. For me, in my idea, the good opportunities for us, American and Vietnamese side, you know, for winning the war. Because, you know, the hardcore of communists, you know, almost destroyed. If we continue like that, you know, the morale, you know, is going to collapse, you know. By media or by the wise man, you not say this one, by the one. Not just your wise man, you know. But Vietnam story. They advise President Johnson to change the policy and make difference. Make you know the make you know the change the situation from good to bad. Yeah, like you know you remember in the Bulge in the Second World War.
The Bulge.
The Bulge.
The Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah. You know that. If you know your general, you know, lost. Temper, and you know you don't have the chance. I should never, you know, must be lost on their star. I should never. Maybe and Patton too. And maybe you know Jean Taylor. What did they change? 5 minutes. The question in the war, you know, is 5 minutes last 5 minutes. Important. It's that too.
you lose your temper. My bad advisor.
Who do you think was responsible for that?
Wise man.
The wise man.
Yeah, wise man.
What did you think of the Nixon administration's Vietnamization program?
Oh yeah. Sincerely, I respect Nixon. I respect Nixon. I agree with his policy on China, on Vietnam, on Vietnamization. And he can go, I say, with his policy, with China, with Vietnam, we can win the war very easily. You know why? Because, China don't like, China, after, Nixon. They don't like, the Vietnam to be defied. And China may help, American, to make peace. And Vietnamization is very efficient. With popular forces, with new Hamlet policy. And we can deal with people who are very easily. Laos, Cambodia, we have any chance over there. I am very optimistic.
So that was a good plan?
I think so, for me. A good strategy. A good strategy. You withdraw all your forces, and we did the war with popular forces. But when the communists use the big units, you cut your aid, your money like that, and your ammunition. It's ridiculous.
So you're talking about after there was the successful Easter Offensive, or the success against the Easter Offensive in 1972, when Americans kept supporting the Vietnamese, the Arvin forces, and then in 75 with this second onslaught of North Vietnamese. What did you think of the Easter Offensive in 72?
The communists lose the war, lose the balance. We win the war, we win the balance. The balance. The communists use the convention war. Yeah, it's the first time we use the convention war, and we win the war. And for the people war, in the countryside, we are winning. We control all the countryside. But in 1975, when we control the countryside, with the popular forces like that, and the communists use the big units, but we don't have enough morale. We don't have enough munition too. And we don't have enough support. The propaganda from inside, outside, from Washington, like that, make us victim from outside.
If you think if the United States had kept up support in 1975, South Vietnam could have defended itself.
I think so. I hope so. I think so. In the country, we have border forces, we have regional forces, we have New Jersey Hamlet, and we have good paratroopers with reserve units, And in the sea we have the 7th fleet, the marine of Americans, And if the Politburo know that you are ready to intervene, they never use the big units to capture South Vietnam. They fear your reaction, they fear very much. You see Wong Nguyen Yat? They fear very much about your reaction, like a Busan, Busan story? You remember Busan story? Korea.
Busan.
Busan story? And in 1975, we had the same, we had a Busan story too. If you counterattack with your bombing only,
air power.
Air power.
their power on Reykjavik. You know, we can destroy it because it all, like, you know, in Iraq, you know, remember?
Mm-hmm.
You know, with air power,
mm-hmm.
like Kosovo with air power. Yeah.
Well, why don't you go ahead and tell me what happened in 1975 when North Vietnam successfully attacked into South Vietnam, and the urban units were either dispersed or destroyed in 1975. What happened to you and your family?
For me?
When Saigon fell.
Oh,
in
yeah.
April 1975.
Yeah. Yes, you know, secret for you. Before the fall of Saigon, I tried to use the refugees, you know, to make, you know, the last reaction, you know, to fight against the communists around Saigon. And you know that, you know. But, you know, men, you know, surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we must accept, you know, the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm very, very sad about the America. I think it is the betrayal. I'm sorry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A bit betrayal. I don't like to go. Except to stay. Or many friends, you know, fly to America, but I don't like to go. We go at OC. My children don't agree with me about that. But you know, I am too stupid, you know. I'm too chauvinistic. Too
stubborn?
Chauvinistic, you know. And you know, I'm nervous. I'm angry, you know, about America.
Why?
Except to stay. After a month and a half, you know. I volunteer to go to concentration camp. I want to concentrate to the level camp. Yeah, and I stayed there for 3 years. And my family were bed chef. My wife must go to the countryside, you know, to get food, or you know, and I said, we have nothing. 3 years in the labor camp. After that, you know, because I was, you know, I was retired. I was retired from the army in 1963, and they freed me in 1978. And I had two boys, you know, missing the sea. And I tried to go to now, you know, I agree to go to go by boat to fly from the country. But I was arrested. I spent 3 more years in jail, in labor camps, until 1982, 1983. A big lesson for me. I you know, 50 years in communist regime with two boys, you know, uncertainty. Good lesson for me.
This is tape 2 of the interview with Ung Chiu, and why don't you describe for me now the experiences that you had after your second imprisonment from 1983 to 1990 in Saigon.
Second?
After your second imprisonment, what you mentioned, well, this was the period after 1983 was Doi Mai, and was...
I was Saigon.
You were in Saigon.
Saigon, you know, and the atmosphere is better after with the Doi Mai's, project, it's a program. And I can talk, you know, more. I can talk with them, you know, more freely. I can criticize the regime, you know, but you know, you know, restriction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I criticize them, but you know, with restriction, not easy, but I like to criticize, you know that, you know, but it is more open from 1985 to 1990. It's been more open, and the economy also changed too. And from 1989, you know, I went to Hanoi to get the passport, the passport to go. But in the beginning, you know, I like to go to Japan.
You wanted to emigrate to Japan.
Japan, because we have one boy over there.
Uh-huh.
But because we had the human operation project, you know, we changed, you know, the visa, we changed, you know, the direction,
mm-hmm.
And I went to America. Because without your human operation program, you know,
mm-hmm.
Maybe I was now in Japan.
Okay.
But I was in Japan. I know nothing. Because you know, no books, you know, about Vietnam War, all of that, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I'm lucky.
So where did you, when you came to the United States, where did you come? Where was your port of entry? When you left Vietnam, and what, that was in 1990? What year did you leave Vietnam?
Huh?
What
where?
Year? What year?
Zero. What year? Leave Vietnam?
Mm-hmm.
June 1990.
What? How did you get to the United States?
By plane.
So you landed in Seattle.
In Seattle, and I lived there with my daughter.
So you landed there and you stayed there.
You stayed there.
And you've lived there ever since.
Lived there with my daughter.
Okay.
And my boy over there.
Uh-huh.
We had two boys.
Uh-huh.
And one girl at Seattle.
Okay. What? Have you worked in the United States at all, or did you just come and live? Have you had any jobs here?
No jobs.
Okay.
No, because I'm too old.
Okay.
And maybe I'm too lazy.
No. Oh, yeah. You're 71.
72.
72. So when you came here, you were already 63 or so, 62, 63.
But
so
I'm too lazy.
That's retirement age.
Yeah, but I'm too lazy. I just go to the to library, you know, to look books about Vietnam War, Vietnam War, and I talk, you know.
Did you know English before you came to the United States? Did you know the English language?
I'm here, sure.
So you already spoke English before you came here?
Yeah.
Okay. Where did you learn English?
Where? When I was at senior high school, when I was young.
When you were young?
Yes, senior high school. In 1947,
And where was this?
In 1946-47.
Where?
In Vietnam.
In
senior high school.
This was a Catholic school.
Yeah.
That you attended. So you learned French and English.
French and English, and Latin.
And Latin.
Latin.
Wow.
And in the level camp, you know, I loved Russian. I can read Russian.
Were there Russians in the labor camps with you?
Yeah, I autodidact. I use a dictionary to learn Russian. I use one dictionary. You
autodidactic.
Know. Yeah, autodidactic. You know, one book. You know, a dictionary. I can translate. You know, I can read into the Russian in 3 months.
Wow.
Because you know, in labor camp, you know, I had nothing to do. Just relax.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But you know, the Russian is different from Latin or French or with Cyrillic, you know.
Yeah, the Cyrillic language. The Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah, alphabet, you know. Something, you know, different.
Uh-huh. So, how have you liked America? Have you enjoyed coming to the United States?
Oh, yeah. I like America. I like your system, but I don't understand America. Okay, I'll sit away from me, an enigma. You know, like, you know, Clinton, you know, president, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why he's president, and he was impeached by him. I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
A lot of Americans don't understand. A lot of us don't understand.
You too?
A lot of Americans don't understand.
You know.
Well, so you've been treated well since you've been here?
Sure.
Americans have been nice to you?
Sure, so everywhere, everybody.
everybody, everywhere. You know, white, black, young or old, rich or poor, you know, and they are very nice to me. Very nice to me. My neighborhood, you know, is number one in the world. You know, I get many friends. In train, in bus, you know, I go around the country by bus, by train. You know, I enjoy, you know, my trip with everybody. I drink a beer, I talk with them in the train, you know, or something like that. Talk openly, you know. Openly. I'm very lucky to be, I'm almost here. I'm so lucky to be, to talk with you like that. The first time, you know, I can talk freely like that. Talk, you know, in, from my mind, from I don't worry, you know. I don't have no reserve, you know, in the open atmosphere like that. I'm so lucky and so happy.
What do you miss about Vietnam?
Oh, Vietnam? Yeah, you know, I am one way Vietnamese. I am, you know, I have one boy over there, and I have 70 million over there. And my dream from I was young is to have a border of Vietnam. A border, a free, maybe like Japan. To border of Vietnam, to be strong, to be rich, you know, to be free. But now, you know, we have, now in Vietnam we have anything. We lose everything over there. No freedom, no, you know, No dignity.
Dignity.
You know that? We lose many things with the communist regime. We lose many things.
Do you think things are changing now?
They're changing, you know, but it depends on America. Clinton say normalization. But
normal trade relations.
We have, you know, a peaceful transition, peaceful, you know, transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Clinton say like that. But your ambassador, you know, there.
Pete Peters.
Peterson. I think he is ambassador of the communists, not ambassador for America. You know, he defend communists too much. You see that?
Hmm.
He protect, you know. Before, you know, Collins, you know, the Crow, you know, Lodge, you know, they are unfair to us. But now, you know, Peterson, you know, that he is unfair to me, to us, but very fair to companies over there.
Hmm.
You think so? No,
I don't know.
You know. This is my idea. Uh-huh. Because he is the ambassador. Mm-hmm. It is the policy of your government, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He must, you know, talk. You know, he know the problems. But you know, he's ambassador. You know, the ambassador is always obey the order from Washington, from state.
Mm-hmm. He follows the orders of the Secretary of State.
The policy, you know.
Right.
But you know. Oh yeah, politics is politics.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the most important things that we should learn from the Vietnam War and the Vietnam experience?
Oh. Know the countries. Know the countries.
By that, I assume you mean, yeah, know the people,
know the culture,
know the society, the politics, before you get involved in something like that.
In Vietnam, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, like the ugly American, in the ugly American and the quiet American. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are strong, you are big power, you can do anything, but for my country, a small country, you know, backward.
Well, speaking of the quiet and the ugly American, a person that we haven't discussed yet is Edward Lansdale.
Yeah.
What did you think of him? Did you get to meet him?
Yeah.
What
in Saigon, you
know.
She was so close to
the
president. Yeah, Yim, you know. Yeah. You know, I try, you know, to meet them over there. Uh-huh. Yeah, he good man. He know the problems. Hmm. Yeah, he know the problems. Hmm. But in ugly American, you know, we have many ambassador. In ugly American, your ambassador know the problems. In the ugly American, your ambassador was it. He worked for the communist. in the early America,
uh-huh.
You really mean?
Mm-hmm.
In the early America,
uh-huh.
Yeah. The ambassador,
mm-hmm.
The work was mostly white. He don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you know, now Mr. Peterson, you know, the ambassador now in Hanoi. He was a prisoner of war. And now he become ambassador, and he married to a Vietnamese, and
that's right. He's married to a Vietnamese who fled to Australia.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Vietnamese. But you know, the politics, always politics. Hmm.
So you have traveled back to Vietnam.
Hmm.
How often since 1990? How many times have you been back to Vietnam?
I came here in 1990. Mm-hmm. I come back to Vietnam 1997.
Mm-hmm.
For commemoration of my father's death. In 1999, you know, in April.
Mm-hmm. This past April.
I come back to Vietnam, you know. To inaugurate, you know, the temple for my father-in-law, my grandfather-in-law. We built a house, you know, like to offer in the memory of my father-in-law. We came back over there with my wife, you know, to be there, you know.
So you've been there twice.
Twice, and we use this occasion to go to Hanoi. Go to Hanoi to phát diệm Bùi Chu là I go to Tây Ninh Con Tum,
mm-hmm.
Con Tum, you know, to see again my
where you work
some idea in my memory, you know. Yeah.
How and you went back as a U.S. citizen? Now you were a United States citizen.
Yeah.
When you
sure.
When did you become a citizen?
1996. Because I must be, you know, I must be a citizen American first. If you have something wrong, something bad over there, you know. But if we have a citizenship, very difficult, very dangerous for me to go over there.
Mm-hmm. How were you treated?
Not too bad.
When you went back to Vietnam, how did they treat you?
No, not too bad. Not too bad, you know, with the passport, with the Afghan passport,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the Công an, the security forces, you know, who may give me many problems when I was there, now, you know, okay, you are American, you know, and try to help you in the country, and, you know, and now I'm an American citizen, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, it is an irony, you know, but you know, no choice. But I'm happy to be an American citizen, you know. my dream, you know, when I was young, to have a Vietnamese and to be Vietnam independent. And now Vietnam independent, I cannot sleep over there. I must fly. For my country, for my people, I love. It's hard for me too, huh? For me like old man. I like to be here, but my wife, very hard for her to leave. Mm-hmm. It's completely different, you know. He can drive the car, he can do, but you know, he always, you know, she always, you know, demand you over there. And she, you know, I tell you a story. She now used his economy, you know, mm-hmm. the money, to help, you know, the student over there, the people who go to seminary. To become priest,
mm-hmm.
He have now, you know, 6 or 7 seminarists to become priest. He get some money from other people, you know, and give them over there.
This is your wife.
my wife.
She helps. She's helped six people become priests.
Yeah, to become priest. You know, get what the heck? She don't give me money.
You're not a priest.
Yeah, so don't become a priest. You know, but she's very proud.
That's very nice.
Very, very proud, and he like to go back. You know, to see the future priest. Mm-hmm. And this year, when he was at Nghệ An here, mm-hmm.
at Nghệ An, here, you know, here, mm-hmm. the province of Ho Chi Minh. Mm-hmm. And the province of Vinh Trường Tổ, mm-hmm. you know, Tổ. But you know, he is a reformer in 19th century. Mm-hmm. And we got, you know, three people, mm-hmm. and we have, you know, a hospital and four young seminarians. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. we my wife, you know, get someone from somewhere, mm-hmm. and send over there to help, you know, the dispensary, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and it's a dispensary of about 20 kids, and for young seminary, mm-hmm. here.
Very nice.
You know, sometimes, you know, if you go to Seattle, maybe you will invite you to my house and to see
that.
My wife. My wife, you know, she's very religious. Mm-hmm. And but she like to live here.
She'd rather be in Vietnam.
But you know, her English is very bad. He's not yet citizenship. He's very upset with that, because you know he can speak French, mm-hmm. but he cannot speak English very well. Mm-hmm. He can pass, you know, the test, mm-hmm. in writing, mm-hmm. but when he in the interview like that, talking, you know,
that's
three times. I don't know why so difficult.
Does she keep trying? Is she gonna try again?
No. He lose another patient. Yeah. Now, you know, but I'm happy now to go back, you know, to write something, mm-hmm. and to send you some documents, you know, from
okay.
Vietnam.
Okay.
And maybe it helps you a lot.
Thank you. Yes, we would like
for your research.
Thank you.
For your research.
The Vietnam archive would like that.
Yeah, for your research. Because I know you are very familiar with Vietnamese programs. And I send you some documents, you know,
mm-hmm.
to have you in your research.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to discuss today?
Oh, maybe too much.
No. I didn't have any other any specific questions. I didn't know if you had of anything that you wanted to discuss yourself, mm-hmm. or anything that you had thought about.
Yeah, but you know, here it is my writing here, but my English is not well. Maybe you know.
Because I think I've pretty much covered all the questions I've got to ask you.
Maybe you know you photo for me on.
Yes, I'll photocopy those sheets that you.
Yeah,
have.
And I keep one and it's
right.
to you. And maybe in the future, you know, I rectify something here.
Yes.
And you too, maybe because my. I write about that, you know, last night, you know,
mm-hmm.
until 2:00 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
but my English is not really good.
Oh, this is fine. I can read this. Okay. Well, this concludes the oral history interview with Dong Chu.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your.